Welcome to the HR Power Hour, presented by Career Management Associates. I'm David Chulo. It's about all things in the human resource world. We're going to bring in local, regional, and national guests, and we're going to talk about a variety of topics and explain why human resource management is critical to your business success so that you can make decisions to keep and retain great talent. And you're listening to the HR Power Hour presented by CMAcareer.com and Maine.DaleCarnegie.com. Today we're talking with Melissa Campos. She is the one, the only VP Instruction and Carnegie Master for Dale Carnegie, Rochester, New York. Melissa, how you doing?
I'm fabulous, David. Thanks for having me.
No, thanks for coming on. You know, you have been working there how long now?
I've been with Dale Carnegie 14 years. Yeah, 14
years.
14
years, long time. What is the takeaway that you say every morning or every week that you work here? What is it that you say to yourself you're really doing?
I always tell people I have such a phenomenal job because what I do is I provide, and any Dale Carnegie facilitator provides a safe space for people to try different things in an environment where they're getting coaching, almost like a catalyst to try those different things, because a lot of the times we wait until we feel like doing things. Instead, we provide the safe space in order to get people into action so that it helps them shift and reach a different level of potential. It's pretty awesome when you can just be a small part in someone's development so that they can see who they are, but also who they can be and should be. Pretty fantastic.
No, it really is. You know, we're going to be talking a lot today about challenges women face at work. And the Dale Carnegie program and the Dale Carnegie system and the way that you train as a Carnegie Master focuses a lot on leadership of women. Why is that so important to you?
It's important. There's a couple of different reasons. One is I've had participants who are women go one or two ways. The one that I see most often is we as women, I think we doubt ourselves a lot more than men do. And I've witnessed it firsthand in having conversations with women and helping them understand that that's not a bad thing to question ourselves. It's how can we have the self-compassion? And I feel like the stress principles allow us to do that, whether it's doing the very best that we can, whether it's recognizing that unjust criticism is often a disguised compliment. You know, so having that self-compassion as well as allowing us to be able to, how can we treat people with dignity and respect as well as hold people accountable? So whether you're male or female, it's helpful. But I think that just being able to build that self-compassion and confidence, a lot of times more for women, can be a challenge because we face the imposter syndrome where it's like we feel like we're never enough to take that next step, whereas men will take that next step and figure it out. We will say, well, I think I need X, Y, and Z before I can take that step. So we're a lot more conservative when it comes to our self-belief.
Do you think that's biological? Do you think it's environmental? Do you think it's something that is, you know, teachable, trainable? I'm kind of trying to understand the theory behind, you know, what you see as the challenge in that area.
Yeah, possibly a multiple. It's different dynamics. So one is, you know, women, we are wired to be more empathetic. And, you know, I'm talking generalizations here. It's not black and white, right? It's all gray, as people are. But women are more empathetic, more emotion-based, not all the time. But and with that emotion, we can feel like we're not ready for something rather than looking at the facts and looking at what strengths we bring to the table. I also think that women struggle. You know, we're still in charge of a lot of things at home, too, if we're a working mother, you know. So we may not necessarily take on those risks because we're afraid of the opportunity cost. in terms of our families, as well as making sure we can keep the house running, you know. So between biology, between the demands that we have, as well as when it comes to environment, sure, there aren't, you know, studies will show that there aren't as many women in the higher levels of the workplace as there are men. So that can be very much a challenge.
And when we talk about, you know, women getting elevated in organizations, I think there has certainly been a shift in the last number of years. I've seen it certainly in the corporate world and in the mm-hmm. training world. We're dealing with more women in senior levels. Have you seen that as well? And why do you think we're actually starting to see some gains made?
One is there's more women in the workplace, period, right, today. So if there's more women in the workplace and we're excelling in what we do, there's going to be more women that are going to take on those challenges. And I would also say is that women are trying to figure out what we want to do, you know. And the one key thing that's important is that we, if we're going to have females as leaders and males, I think the issue is that we're still in gender roles, and so it's for any employee, it's, you know, making sure that we offer that flexibility, because if you've got two people that are working at home with a family, there's a lot of balancing that needs to be done between the two in order to make it work and allow them both to grow their careers. And so that's an issue just in corporate America that we have to be able to deal with, is making sure we've got those flexible work arrangements so people can make their families, make things happen with their families and their careers. Because unfortunately, you know, we have that, what feels like a brick sometimes, our smartphones, and we're working all the time. So if we're working more often and it's after hours, et cetera, then our companies can be more flexible with what needs to be done during the day in order to make our families, I should say, make everything happen in life, which is not an easy thing to do.
You know, it's interesting. You talk about the demands and of the roles, right, that are out there. Mm-hmm. And I think that that's an interesting point, that a lot of these roles have been designed for someone who can travel a lot, or for someone who can spend extra time doing that and doesn't necessarily take into account for a family at times.
Mm-hmm.
And you can make the argument, right, that in some cases, from a company perspective, that's in the best interest of the company, right?
Yep.
And you can certainly make the argument that sometimes it's in the best interest of the employee, but it does put an added strain on the personal life, which has become more and more important as we look at the generational side mm-hmm. of the focus today. Do you see that as an area that you try to encourage senior leadership, and especially either women or men, just people in leadership, to look at closer?
So here's the thing. I travel a lot for work, as does my husband. So we're very fortunate. We figure things out, whether it be extended care at school, whether it be our parents helping out. So the question that we have to ask ourselves, whether we're male or female, is what do we want out of our career? Period. You know, I'm okay with traveling here and there. You know, the month of July, I was on a plane. I took 5 different trips. So it's what do you want to happen? And then being able to seize those opportunities or decide if it's not going to work for you, and being okay with, well, you want to know what? I'm going to stay at a coordinator level, or, you know, at an entry level. I'm happy. I like what I do. And I feel like I can offer my family the best possible thing that I can. So make that decision. If you're someone who's saying, you know, I need to prove myself, I want to take it up a notch in my career, I'm okay with the opportunity cost, because there's a finite number of hours in a day, and it's not going to change. So we have to make choices So if we want this career advancement, there's going to be things that we are going to have to do in order to do so. And in a global economy, travel is getting less, it's something that we're not able to escape anymore. So we have to decide, do I want to work for a global company? Do I want to work for a local company? All of these things are critical because that's how we can create happiness. Comes from decisions, right? Career happiness comes from decisions that we own and we make. So we have to decide, what do we want? And then what are we willing to either give up, sacrifice for a short time, for a longer time, depending on what it is?
No, you're absolutely right. It's all decision making, right? It's all personal choice of what somebody wants to do. And we're talking with Melissa Campos, Vice President of Instruction and Carnegie Master for Dale Carnegie Rochester. And I'm your host, David Chulo. I think the challenge sometimes comes down is people feel they have to do more, right? And they have to climb the rungs, or they have to. It's not just enough for them to be a coordinator, or not just enough. And so there is this tug and pull between family, career, personal challenge, personal acceptance. And that's a real issue, because if you aren't doing something you love, then you're not necessarily engaged at the highest level. And so there is a balancing act of trying to understand your personal life, your personal career, which are not necessarily in sync.
Yeah, absolutely. I'll give you, you know, one of the things, I'll give you my own personal example, is that as a working mom for the past 8 years, I have had a very flexible schedule. I figure out when to get things done and help. I am able to work at home on Mondays, Wednesdays, and Fridays. Now, some of those times I'm working every day, I'm coming in the office every day based on customer needs, but I had a pretty flexible schedule. All three of my kids now, and I was okay with that. I was still learning and growing, right? I was still working with phenomenal clients, with a great team, and I had to make a decision to say, it's not about escalating my career right now. It's about taking a pause, doing the best work that I possibly can do, as well as being there for my family when they're younger. I had the fortune to be able to find the opportunity and plan for that opportunity so I could have the flexibility. Now my kids are going back to school. All three of them will be in school. So this is the time for me to do something different. You know, so it's not doing more. It's just I was getting to a point where I wanted to see what else was out there. I've been with Dale Carnegie full time for 14 years, you know, so, and I'm at the top level as a Carnegie Master. And it was, okay, you know what, is doing what you love and working with people that you love enough and having that flexibility? And the answer was, I'm ready for another gear. You know, I feel like I've got another gear. So it's not about more. It's about different. And if we're challenging ourselves and if it's within my vision, which it was, that's what made me make the leap in my career. But it was very intentional. It came with, I would say, a 2-year period of me reflecting about where I wanted to go next and making the decision with intention, as well as still allowing me to do what I love, which I can still train on my own time, work with Dale Carnegie, which is awesome.
We're talking with Melissa Campos, VP of Instruction and a Carnegie Master for Dale Carnegie Rochester, New York. You're listening to the HR Power Hour on News Talk WLOB 100.5 FM, and we'll be right back.
Thank you. Founded in 1958, Jackson Lewis is a national law firm with a local presence. The firm's 765 attorneys practicing in 54 locations throughout the U.S. and Puerto Rico provide a wide range of resources to address every aspect of the employer-employee relationship. HR professionals, business and in-house counsels, and C-suite professionals count on Jackson Lewis as it has one of the most active employee litigation practices in the United States. Contact them today at JacksonLewis.com. That's JacksonLewis.com.
If you're responsible for hiring and firing, you know it can be like a roulette wheel. If your new hire turns out to be a bad hire, well, all you've lost is time and money. Hello, I'm David Chulo of Career Management Associates. Don't gamble with your hiring. We have a better solution. We've helped hundreds of companies like yours find the right talent, and we guarantee it. Career Management Associates delivers people that fit. Go to cmacareer.com.
And we're back, and you're listening to the HR Power Hour, presented by cmacareer.com and maine.dalecarnegie.com. Today we're talking with Melissa Campos, VP of Instruction and Carnegie Master for Dale Carnegie Rochester. Melissa, I got to tell you, we're talking about challenges women face at work. We're going to talk not only about the challenges, but what they can do about it. And so one of the questions that I really want to ask you is, what have you learned about women while training them?
I've learned.
By the way, may I just mention one thing? If you really give me good information here, you will help many husbands out there today, just so you'll know that.
What have I learned in terms of the challenges? I would say a couple of things that I've learned in personal conversations. One is women feeling like they're not going to speak up in a meeting because they're nervous, because you might have an aggressive male counterpart, or you might have someone that just isn't willing to listen. So if that happens, women are not going to speak up. So one of the things that I always say is set yourself up with a goal. You know, when I was on a search committee, and it was with a bunch of local high-level people, and I said, geez, and this was a few years back, I said, all right, Melissa, if you can just challenge yourself to add value 2 times per meeting, that's a good goal. So having that internal goal, it allowed me to listen at a deeper level, not focus on just saying something, but saying something of value. You know, that if we can make that goal as a female, regardless of the environment we're in, then we're more likely to push ourselves on it. The other issue that we face is that we're almost in a double bind, because the stereotype is that, you know, women take care of their employees, whereas like men, they take charge and get results. Like, that's very stereotypical and not true. The problem with that is that it's almost like we're set up for failure. So if we're not demonstrating care, then we're trying to drive results. And if we're driving results, are we being too bossy? Yeah. So is it, you know, am I being too soft in terms of my approach, or am I too aggressive? And, you know, people think that we're too aggressive and trying too hard. So it's a very challenging, it's a big challenge for women that they face. And one of the programs that that I deliver is called High Impact Presentations, where, you know, we're videotaped and we're giving 7 presentations over 2 days. And the key piece of that is finding the authenticity, you know, allowing people to become themselves in the way that they're delivering their leadership. So what I mean by that is trying to determine, how do I want people to perceive me, right? Like, what are those 3 characteristics? So for me, it's compassionate, it's enthusiastic, as well as bold. So I have compassionate and bold so that they can counter each other, right? So I'm intentional in the way that I'm delivering my leadership, because people view us through 4 panes, what Dale Carnegie calls the credibility window. what we do, what we say, how we say it, and how we look. So we've got to be really attuned to those four different areas. And it's amazing when watching, especially women, you know, really take charge of the characteristics that they own and seeing the growth. So the first key thing is determine what are those three characteristics, regardless of the audience, how do we want people to receive us? And then start determining in what is it that I need to do? What is it that I need to say? How do I need to say it? Right? And how do I need to appear? Right? Whether it's facial expressions, whether it's being able to, you know, make sure we're holding our head high, you know, whatever it is, we've got to be able to determine that and be just as intentional with that as well as our work.
It's interesting. You talked a lot about the four parts, and one being the appearance. Certainly, as you think about the workplace, I think there is a general consensus is that women are more conscious of necessarily how they look at work, or at least how they are perceived to be looked at work. Mm-hmm. What's your take on how that affects their true psyche in terms of being able to be a leader in an organization?
I would say that if we're focused on how we look in terms of appearance, it's the wrong thing. If we're looking at how we look in terms of how we're presenting our leadership, you know, like for instance, my rule of thumb is, you know, I stay pretty classic and neat so that, you know, you're not going to see me in super trendy stuff. And you'll see me with like a dash of sass is what I say. You know, I'm pretty classic with a dash of sass because I don't want it to take away from my message. And I don't want it to take away. Yeah, and people will say, well, can I just be who I am? And I say, absolutely. You know, what the unfortunate part is that we as humans are programmed to judge pretty quickly. You know, we when someone even says something or when someone even walks in the door, one of the things that I tell people when we're when I'm facilitating is as soon as you walk in the door, you're overcoming objections before you even open up your mouth because people are forming perceptions of us. And typically 60% have an idea of who we are before we even talk. So I want to make sure that I'm doing everything that I can so that people will listen as opposed to judge. I was doing a workshop, and it was with a bunch of PhDs, highly skilled individuals, mostly males as well. And I remember walking in, this is probably when I was in my like late 20s, and I remember just watching their reaction, you know. Just they're like, who I'm, and I'm 5 feet tall on a good day. So they're like, who, what's this young whippersnapper going to teach us, you know? And so I knew I had to overcome objections. So if I were dressed super fashionably and, you know, everything to the nines, that probably would have done me in even more. Instead, I was in a very polished suit, hair back, so that I was super polished and ready to go. And from that, they loved the process and ended up doing like four more. So we want to ask ourselves what kind of an impression we want to give up to people and get ourselves out of the equation and just focus on others.
Well, I think it's,
and we can still be authentic in who we are and what we value.
Well, you know, to your point, I think it is about also dressing for the audience, right? If you're going to be presenting, you got to know your audience. You got to know the organization. You know, when I used to work, for example, for Levi Strauss, right? So when I worked for Levi's, if somebody came in and they were in jeans and they were in, they were presenting themselves in the way somebody would in Dockers or jeans, you were like, okay, they get it. If somebody walks in a three-piece suit, you're like, that's nice. I appreciate the professionalism, but it's not necessarily the matching the image of where you are or where you're going to, right, in terms of the focus that you have. And so people listening to you do judge. You know, I always talk about the conversation. When somebody walks in, you have the normal human reaction of three ways. Either, okay, this could be an okay person. Oh, my God, could I get away from them as fast as humanly possible? Or I love them. I mean, really, those are the three reactions we all have. And so to your point, we make those snap judgments within about 6-10 seconds, and that's the reality of the human nature.
Yep. So I'd rather cooperate with the inevitable as opposed to try and, you know, go against the grain, because I'm one person against human nature. So I might as well cooperate with the inevitable and think about the audience and focus on that versus caring about my appearance for me, if that makes sense.
It does. You know, we talked a little bit about aggressiveness. Talk a little about balancing assertiveness versus aggressiveness.
Yeah, it's interesting. I was working with a woman just a couple months ago, and one of the things, and she was pretty, you know, aggressive in our sessions, and we were talking about being able to get our opinions across and do so in a meaningful way. And one of the things that she shared was, she said, well, oftentimes I just think I'm right. And as soon as they start talking, I'm just waiting to get in there so that I can give my opinion so that I can convince them. And I asked her, I said, well, if you're looking to demonstrate more compassion and if you're looking to generate more collaboration in your role at work, how do you think that's coming across? And she was like, it's not. And I was like, all right, so let's talk about it. Are you willing to be more open, or do you need to be right? And it was a tough question for her to answer. And she says, I don't know if I'm ready to answer that question yet. I said, that's fine. Until you decide how you want to answer that question, your vision's not going to happen. And the reason why I share this story is because a lot of times when it comes to women being aggressive, it's about we're not demonstrating that we're still open. It's that we want and feel the need to be right, which can be challenging. So we can influence, and but we also have to be able to be willing to listen. So to balance it, there's a couple of things that I would suggest. One is, you know, I can be pretty tough, so I try to balance it with appreciation. You know, appreciation and enthusiasm and just demonstrating care. So that then, you know, I'm a firm believer that if you're kind, supportive, and compassionate 80% of the time, people will give you the leeway for 20% of the time to hold them accountable, to bring some tough issues to the table if you're more consistent with those types of behaviors. So that's what I would recommend, is that 80-20 rule, so that you can still keep the balance of caring for our people, because it's critical, as well as making sure that we're challenging them, you know, because that's not a bad thing.
And we're talking with Melissa Campos, Vice President of Instruction and Carnegie Master for Dale Carnegie Rochester, and I'm your host, David Chulo. You know, you talk about listening, and I certainly know that as a leader, listening is a key component to success. Sometimes it's hard for people to listen. Mm-hmm. And this is not a gender specific. That's just a fact,
period.
Right?
Period.
Yeah. Sometimes it's just hard to listen. Are there techniques that you can share where people say, hey, how do I kind of keep myself checked when I just want to shut off the listening?
Yeah, you know, it's interesting because I've done a lot of workshops on listening and different trainings. And so what we struggle with is, if I remember the statistics correctly, we listen between 125 to 250 words per minute, yet our mind is processing between 1 and 3,000. So there's a lot of noise going on in our mind. And typically it's not channeled towards the person in front of us. So we do. That's why it's such a big challenge. As well as the other key piece is that when I, you know, there's different levels of listening. You know, there's the ignore, pretend, then we get to selective, then we get to attentive, and then lastly, empathetic. So what I've noticed when I have people determine where they spend most of their time in those five levels, it's in selective. And so what they say is, as soon as they hear something that interests them, then they start tuning in. So the key question that I ask people is, who's in charge of the conversation? Who owns it? The person asking the questions or the person that's talking? And a lot of times people say the person that's talking. And really it's the person that's asking the questions. So one of the ways to stay engaged, one, is to ask questions, right? To focus on asking questions regardless of what it is, because it can help move the conversation along as well. The other key piece is that when we feel ourselves drifting, because we typically tune in right at the beginning of the conversation so we can hear the general theme of it, and then we start tuning out and then wait until it's our turn to talk, and that's when we start tuning in again, is in that in-between stage, really, whether it's eye contact, whether it's making sure we're not in front of our computer, those types of things, the distractions that enable us to disengage from the conversation. So asking questions as well as challenging ourselves to get rid of the distractions and taking notes, that helps me a lot.
Well, that certainly is great advice, and certainly one of the things I would certainly recommend people think about is, do you do those things? Do you really listen? Mm-hmm. Do you take notes? Do you actually stay engaged? You know, I think there's certainly personalities that are easier to listen to and voices that are easier yep. to listen to. And there's an element of perception, right, of the person mm-hmm. on both sides, whether this is credible or not credible or worth my time or not worth my time. But you don't really know unless you listen. And so right. I would highly recommend that people really think about the way they're listening if they want to be successful in the workplace. We're talking with Melissa Campos, Vice President of Instruction and Carnegie Master for Dale Carnegie, Rochester, New York. You're listening to the HR Power Hour on News Talk WLOB 100.5 FM. And we'll be right back.
At 154 years old, Verrill Dana has an illustrious history and more than seven generations of legal expertise. With more than 130 attorneys across seven offices from Maine to Washington, D.C., Verrill Dana serves clients across the country and around the world. HR professionals, business leaders, and in-house counsel count on Verrill Dana, one of the premier labor and employment law practices in the Northeast. Contact them today at verrilldana.com.
And we're back, and you're listening to the HR Power Hour presented by CMAcareer.com and Maine.DaleCarnegie.com. I want to thank our sponsors, Jackson Lewis, All We Do Is Work, Redmond Winchell, Counselors at Law, Sheehan Finney, Verrill Dana, Strategic HR, and I want to thank them all because without them, we would not be able to produce this amazing show of HR Educational Radio for you. Today we're talking with Melissa Campos. She's the Vice President of Instruction and Carnegie Master for Dale Carnegie in Rochester, New York. New York. It's all good. Rochester's a great area. Great area.
It is.
So,
big wine country.
It is big wine country. As a matter of fact, my wife and I were out there probably, let's see, we went out to the Clarence and Olean area.
Oh, nice.
And we have friends in both, and we were up by, is it Cuga Lake? I think it is. Yeah, Cuga Lake.
Mm-hmm.
And there's some very nice wineries along there.
Yeah.
And this was brought to you by the New York State Bureau of Travel. Thank you. No, All right, that's probably unofficial, but it's all what it is. All right, so, you know, Melissa, one of the things that we talked about in regards to not only how women face challenges at work, everybody has this main question, how to ask the boss for a raise. Mm-hmm. You know, that is always a difficult conversation. I like to tell my employees it's very simple. When they ask for a raise, I take a sheet of paper off my desk, I put it on the floor, and I say, you can stand on it, and now you're a sheet higher. And I don't know if that's an effective raise technique, but they got a raise, right?
Yeah, right.
So, yeah, not so effective. They're not laughing, I'm sure, if they're listening. But it was entertaining, your thoughts.
What? Oh, I bet.
So talk to us. Talk to us a little about how to ask the boss for a raise, because it's really quite a difficult conversation for men mm-hmm. and women.
I would say the first piece that we have to ask ourselves is, do we feel we need a raise, or do we know we deserve a raise? No one wants to do a bad job, right? I think largely the majority of people want to do a good job. The question is, are we doing the job that's worth asking for a raise? Or is it just because it's been a year? You know, I'm a firm believer that when you're in a role, you want to make sure you're doing more than what's expected. So it's pretty easy to ask for a raise when you can go to the boss and say, to your manager and say, you know, it's been a year, XYZ, and here are the results I've brought the organization, period. You know, whether it's increased sales, whether it's an increase in account penetration in terms of projects, whether it's getting a multi-million dollar project off the ground and getting it done either on time or earlier, whether it be in manufacturing, whether it be on-time delivery, how you've been able to demonstrate that, whether it's increasing market share in a particular industry. Whatever it is, we've got to talk in terms of the benefits that we have been able to bring the organization. So if we can't hang our hat on our contributions on that, it's going to be a very difficult ask. So that's a critical piece, is what bringing in the evidence. Not, I feel I should be getting a raise, you know, I've been here a year, here's some of the things that I've done. We want to hear what's the impact you've had based on the things you've done in order to do that. So that's the critical piece, is making it black and white, because as soon as we make asking for money a gray area, then it becomes more of a subjective thing versus objective. This is black and white. Yeah, you do deserve it based on what you've done. Or, you know what, thank you for bringing it to my attention. Let me think about it and I'll get back to you. Right? That's an okay thing. You can't just expect someone just to say, yeah, absolutely, you can get that based on what you've just given to me. Take some time for that to happen, too. As well as, it's always good to keep our managers in the loop on what it is we are doing and what the impact is. A lot of times we expect our managers just to know everything, and they've got a million things going on, too. They're hearing it from the top as well as from us. So any ways we can help our manager helps us in the long run, too.
You know, it's interesting you talk about feeling. I think that is part of the challenge sometimes, is that people feel they're not getting paid enough. And by the way, I have never met somebody who ever thought they were paid too much.
Right.
Right.
Exactly.
So that's the challenge, right, is that the feeling of mm-hmm. I deserve more versus the fact I deserve mm-hmm. more, right? And that's the difference you're talking about today.
Right, because when we're thinking about finances and when we're thinking about lifestyle, it can be very emotional, right? So we have to have the self-awareness to get ourselves in check and really think about, all right, this is how I feel. Now let's go deeper into what have I done in order for me to be able to demonstrate that I deserve this. Because as soon as we project our own expectations on people, we're going to be disappointed.
You know, that's a very important point. I want you to repeat that again.
As soon as we project our own expectations on other people, we're going to be disappointed.
Yeah. That, you know, I think a lot of people forget that.
Mm-hmm.
Right? I think that's a very interesting point, and well said, by the way, that we do have a perception of what we think personally things should be, mm-hmm. whereas it doesn't necessarily match up with what the reality of the workplace or what the reality of our boss may see it. And so that dialogue becomes so critical, doesn't it?
It does. And that's exactly what it has to be, is a dialogue and a discussion. You know, when we're dealing with, I always go back to this quote that Dale Carnegie says, when dealing with human beings, remember, we're dealing with creatures of emotion, not those of logic. Right? So there is going to be a gray piece of it. So when it comes to getting a raise, make it black and white so we can make it an easier discussion.
You know, the other part that is interesting about asking for a raise is that people sometimes say, hey, I've been here 6 months. I've been here 8 weeks. I've been here less time, yeah. and I've made an immediate contribution. Is that the time to ask?
I would say every year is a good time. Once a year, some companies have policies where you have an annual review, salary review. Sometimes it's when people get promoted, right? So I would say your best time is at a year. Ask ourselves, am I making the contributions to justify it? Right? And if I feel like I'm not, maybe it's even going to the manager and saying, you know, listen, it's been a year. What else do I need to demonstrate in order for me to get that raise? So always asking, just as you said, a dialogue. Dialogue is a back and forth, right? So asking questions, what else needs to be done? How can I help? You know, what, as well as if we're looking for advancement, you know, what other opportunities can I take on in order to get me prepared for the next step?
Do you find that in this particular area, women have a bigger challenge asking for raises?
Yeah, because I think it's a more emotion-driven, and they don't necessarily, they might do more invisible work that doesn't give them the credit, right? So it's being able to show if they are doing that invisible work, what is the impact that it's having, as well as not short selling ourselves. Because going back to what we were talking about earlier, a lot of times we focus on what we don't have, what we're not bringing to the table, so we just don't demonstrate the confidence and self-compassion on what we do bring. And a lot of times we say, oh, it was the team too, which is great, right? You know, it's great to be able to do that. And here's what I did in order to help bring the team along.
And I think it is, right? That
everyone
point.
Has
yes.
their own individual contributions, and it's okay to do that, as well as allow them to feed into the team and give the team credit as well.
I have heard people say, right, you know, it's really the whole team, it's not just me. But when it comes mm-hmm. to increases, when it comes to performance reviews, it's a combination of both. And nobody right. will, you know, I've told many people this, the only people that are going to promote you in terms of, you know, self-promotion is yourself and your mother. And
that's
since
right.
your mother isn't typically working unless you're in a family-owned business, you really only have yourself
that's
to
right.
promote, right?
If you can't do it, then how can we expect anyone else to?
That's exactly right. And we're going to talk more about that when we come back. We're talking with Melissa Campos, Vice President of Instruction and Carnegie Master for Dale Carnegie Rochester. You're listening to the HR Power Hour on News Talk WLOB 100.5 FM. And we will be right back.
Running a company can feel like you're surrounded. A key person quits. A big project presents itself. You need good people fast. Hello, I'm David Chulo of Career Management Associates. Our contract staffing service will fill a position or find the right talent for a short-term project. Hundreds of companies choose us because we deliver people that fit. Career Management Associates, your contract staffing solution. Go to cmacareer.com.
Founded in 1958, Jackson Lewis is a national law firm with a local presence. The firm's 765 attorneys practicing in 54 locations throughout the U.S. and Puerto Rico provide a wide range of resources to address every aspect of the employer-employee relationship. HR professionals, business and in-house counsels, and C-suite professionals count on Jackson Lewis as it has one of the most active employee litigation practices in the United States. Contact them today at JacksonLewis.com. That's JacksonLewis.com.
And we're back, and you're listening to the HR Power Hour, presented by CMAcareer.com and Maine.DaleCarnegie.com. Today we're talking with Melissa Campos, the Vice President of Instruction and Carnegie Master for Dale Carnegie in Rochester, New York. Melissa, I got to tell you, we've had a great conversation today, and I thought we'd wrap up the last few minutes here of the show talking a little about how you think Dale Carnegie helps us become better leaders.
Yeah. When we think about becoming better leaders, it means that we need to evolve and we need to make shifts to get to that next level. And we're typically not going to do it in a work environment, right? We need to have an outside perspective as well as an outside coach. So when we think about Dale Carnegie, our facilitators have been trained for like 300 hours. It's not just someone that's gone through a quick certification few-day process. These are people that have been trained in terms of coaching, giving feedback. And when you are able to have that third perspective in terms of where you want to go as well as helping you to get there, that's critical. But as well as people will go the one-on-one coaching route. I prefer the larger group because there is so much that you can learn from how other people are applying our tools and be able to take in. So it's like a learning environment on steroids. So you're given tools in order to make things happen, either to get yourself to that next level, get promoted, or you're in that next level and you've got to get new tools. So we give you the tools. We're able to practice in the learning environment, and then that's where we're able to get transformation. Now, the cool part is any Dale Carnegie process is driven by vision. So we come in, and each person creates their own vision of what they want to happen for themselves, and that's where the coaching is predominantly directed, is towards where you want to go. So being able to have that, being driven towards that vision, having the tools, being projected towards that vision allows for intention and allows us to do things differently in order to get those different results. So it's pretty cool. We help people see themselves differently so that it allows other people to receive them differently. And that changes the impact that they have on either their organizations or their teams, their families. You know, we help people become the best version of themselves.
Melissa, do you have an example of one, like, really good story that really talks about how you saw this happen to a person, this transformation?
Oh, I've got so many. It's like, to pick one, it's like, gosh.
But my producer tells me we only have time for one, so let's make it one, okay?
I had a manager who was going through one of our processes, and at the end of it, he said, you know, I came in, and he was like a director level, and he said, you know, I came in through the Dale Carnegie process, and he said, and I wasn't as confident in my leadership. Like, I wasn't as grounded with it. He said, through Dale Carnegie, what's cool is you don't just give the tools, right? You give the confidence in order to use the tools. So he and his team were working on a project. So he had the confidence to run a better meeting towards the project. He got them involved. He used the Dale Carnegie principles. They were off target before starting the Dale Carnegie process. And once he graduated, they were ahead of schedule. And he said it's because he had the confidence as well as he used the human relation principles in order to get the team involved. And that's what drove them to be able to reach their deadlines and be ahead of schedule. So it was really cool because it really, that story really shows the intensive piece. We're not just teaching you what to do, right? That's easy to do. We're focusing in on who the person is and who they want to be and being able to develop that internal piece and self-awareness as well.
You talked a lot about in the show today about being compassionate, authentic, and bold. And I think that's three words that definitely describe how the training can make you feel at the end of the of whatever the training may be, whether it's a high impact presentation or whether it be the LTM or whether it be the, you know, Dale Carnegie course itself. And it does bring out the best in the compassion, the authentic part of each individual, and makes you be your bold self, which if we go back to our topic today, which is challenges women face at work, I think being able to be compassionate, authentic, and bold really can help them face the challenges that do happen at work.
You know, there's a great quote by Eleanor Roosevelt. She says, when dealing with yourself, use logic. When dealing with others, use your heart. And so if you think about it, that's exactly what you just said.
That is exactly what I said.
Isn't that a great quote?
It is. It is a fantastic quote. And because at the end of the day, you have to feel it, right? And if you're not feeling it, then I have said many times, if you're not feeling it, then you need to do something else. Because you know, life's too short to be in a situation where it's not the best. And that doesn't mean that you quit today. That means that you, as you have said, take the time to self-reflect and come up with the right answer.
That's right. Yep. Decide what not to do and what to do. Right?
Absolutely. You're correct.
Got to do both.
Well, Melissa, I want to thank you so much for being on the show today. Again, Melissa Campos, Vice President of Instruction and Carnegie Master for Dale Carnegie in Rochester. I want to wish you the best in your career and your success, and hopefully you'll come back on the show sometime.
You got it, sir. Appreciate it.
You're listening to the HR Power Hour on News Talk WLOB 100.5 FM. And now your HR Tip of the Week. Your HR Tip of the Week is being sponsored by VeralDana.com.
Hi, this is Tawny Alvarez from VeralDana. Over the last few months, I've reviewed more and more policies that limited employees' access to his or her personnel file, or have spoken to employers who were initially refusing to provide current employees with a copy of the individual's employee file. In many states, an employee has a statutory right to review his or her personnel file. The statute itself will likely define what information should be included in a personnel file and define how often, where, and when an employee must be provided the opportunity to review and maybe to copy the contents of the file. Oftentimes, there are very quick turnaround times between when an employee makes a request to view the file and when the file is provided by the employer. Before dismissing an employee's request to review his or her file, check to determine whether there are statutory obligations in the jurisdiction in which you operate that permit the employee to review the file. To further discuss what documents are required to be included in a personnel file, as well as best practices in maintaining an employee personnel file, contact me or another member of VeralDana's Labor and Employment Practice Group.
And that's your HR Tip of the Week, sponsored by VeralDana.com. Thank you, everyone, for listening, and catch us every week at 10 a.m. on News Talk WLOB 100.5 FM or 1310 a.m. and streaming live at WLOBRadio.com. Podcasts of this show and every show are available at HRPowerHour.com. Have a great week, everyone, and remember, HR management is critical to your business's success.